Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams, touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Once again, I am joined by the full crew, and they actually showed up at the start of the show this time. Got a great show for you guys tonight. We'll be wrapping things up with an interview from Jason Fitzgerald at Over the Cap, answering some detailed questions, giving some great insight for us about some things related to the Vikings. But before we really jump in today, we got to go around the room, say what's up to everybody. So what's going on, JR?
What's going on, man? Happy to have the whole gang together.
Cool. Miles, what's happening with you, man?
The swamp. Finally glad it's my weekend.
That is a beautiful thing. Saxy.
Yes, sir.
What's going on?
You know, just doing this thing called life.
And before you jump in, I'm calling an audible this evening because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's been going on out there, a lot of stuff popping off on the Twitter.com. And so I was going to jump in with the question of the day.
But
it's really for JR because, you know, JR always tries to stay out of these things. So I'm going to put JR on the spot here and ask him this question. JR, why don't you watch Game of Thrones, man?
I'm not a big TV guy like that. I don't really watch television. I'm an ultimate football guy. So, like, the only shows I watch is, like, Last Chance U or stuff like that. So, I really don't have time to watch TV, honestly. That's the biggest question. I don't have time to, you know, it's like 7 seasons or series in or whatever. I don't have time to just binge watch all that. So, that's one of the biggest reasons why I'm so far behind. So, at this point, I just said forget it.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, we'll get you the box set or something. You know, we'll start a GoFundMe, get you a box set, get you caught up on this. But since we're on Game of Thrones, Miles, who is your favorite character?
It might be Arya. That girl's cold, man. Y'all already know, but I can't wait.
She still hasn't grown into them eyebrows, though, so we'll talk about that.
The ink has ended up on the list.
Just still wear your face. It's over now. I'm about to see Prince next. It's not going to be him anymore.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, Prince, how about you, man? Who's your favorite character?
I think for me, it's an easy answer. I mean, he's kind of been one of my favorite. And in the beginning, I was like kind of still rooting for him because he's such a good guy. But Tyrion Lannister, I can't. Like, I love watching him when he comes on screen every single time. The only thing I don't like as far as his character development is he's kind of moved away a little bit from some of the jokes that made him so popular in the beginning of the series. So I'm hoping that they kind of move him a little more towards that again.
Yeah, and I got to roll with Miles here. I mean, I'm going with the girl Arya. I mean, girl went away and basically turned into a ninja, so... I can't wait for the rest of the season to see how things roll with the.
Did y'all hear the newest episode leak?
Yeah, man.
Again?
I'm staying away from the internet.
I'm not doing
my
all
sister
that.
Watched it. My sister watched it and texted me, and she's like, "You want to know what happens?" I was like, "No,
no. I'm gonna give him my coins exactly the way that the Lord intended. I'm gonna watch it on Sunday night."
All right. Well, let's
real quick. My other favorite character might be Bronn too.
Bronn is
so out of place.
That's why we go move it along. We don't want you to feel left out. You get the first. You get the first question because you missed out on this conversation the last time. So you know, Yink and I had a good conversation. We were chopping it up, talking about the People's Champ, Adam Thielen, and basically just you know responding to that article that Pro Football Focus Scott Barrett from Pro Football Focus basically mentioned in his article that Adam Thielen faced. Not only the easiest cornerback matchups last year, but easiest of the last decade. So we had a little bit of a conversation in terms of what our expectations are for Thielen, the offense, going into this coming year. And we thought we touched on all the points, but one of the comments on Daily Norseman said they wanted to get a little bit more perspective on kind of Adam Thielen and expectations for 2017. So we figured you and Miles weren't here to be a part of that conversation. So we can get your takes on on Mr. Thielen in 2017 and what you expect from him?
I honestly don't expect him to repeat what he did last year. I think he can get back to the mark where he was last year, but I'm really not sure if he would get back to that point simply because he kind of came out of nowhere last year, and now he's more of a known around the league. He's still not a high-profile name, of course, but, you know, his name is on the map. When you play the Minnesota Vikings, you know who Adam Thielen is, and you're going to keep where he is just because he is that type of receiver, and he is one of our better receivers. But I don't expect, you know, nearly 1,000 yards. He'll get to 800, probably lower 900s, similar, maybe something similar to last year. But and then again, over 200 of his yards was in one game against Green Bay, and we know how bad their secondary was last year. So, and I don't expect him to have a tremendous, monstrous game like that. Just because, you know, he is on notice now and he is Minnesota's one of Minnesota's better receivers. So I expect more eyes to be on him this year. But, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if he does top the 1,000-yard mark, but I don't see it.
And, Miles, have any teams come and called you for tape or techniques or things that maybe they can do based on your years of experience on how maybe they could lock down Adam Thielen and stop him from repeating as the most efficient wide receiver in the NFL as we go into this next year?
Yeah, you know, the New Orleans Saints, Sean Payton called me up and he's like, hey, Miles, you know, I need some tips. No, I know you're just playing, but with Thielen, I think, you know, Jared hit it in the head. I think he might get in that, you know, 800 to 900 range. He might have a similar season like he did last year, but it might take him more reception to do it. It might not be quite as efficient as what he was last year because I think it's going to be a lot harder for the matchups he's going to have and some of the like JR said, you know, being keyed on a little bit more. And if Diggs misses any time, Thielen, you know, automatically becomes the number one receiver. And I think it'll be even more pertinent for teams to kind of single in on him because he'll be that guy kind of like, you know, the Houston Texans probably didn't expect to see what they did against Adam Thielen, you know, with no Stephon Diggs last season. I think it was like week five right before the bye. So, you know, I'm on that page where I don't think he's going to do as well as he did last season. I think he definitely will probably have the opportunity, but I just think there's a lot more mouths to feed in this offense this year. So I think it'd be really hard for him to be the guy to be the one to go 1,000 yards, you know, eight touchdowns, whatever that range might be, unless a guy like Stephon Diggs gets hurt and misses a significant amount of games.
Yep, and that's pretty much where we landed with it. I think he can be as good as he was, maybe not as efficient, but I think he can still be as good. But ultimately, if we think the offense is better because we added pieces, it's just going to be tough, I think, for many of the players to live up to the lofty expectations that Vikings Twitter seems to be putting on them. But I'm kind of moving along. Speaking of Vikings Twitter, Skol Sees is the Twitter handle, but he put up a poll today. Would you trade Sam Bradford for Tyrod Taylor? So, Yinka, you weren't a part of the last conversation, so I'll start with you this time around. Tyrod Taylor, Sam Bradford, which one you pick in? Would you trade for him? Kind of, what are your thoughts on that whole kind of thought exercise that was put on Twitter today?
Well, the thing is I'm actually a fan of Tyrod Taylor. I think I like his intangibles, what he can do, the flexibility he has as far as escaping the pocket, you know, moving the pocket. And he is a little bit underrated as far as how efficient he actually is. That being said, I think I'd still keep Sam Bradford. I mean, when you just look at getting the offseason work and getting to work with the wide receivers. But I mean, if the question is, you know, if they're at the same level of knowledge of the offense and all that stuff, you know, I'd be a little bit more okay with pulling that trigger. However, I do like what I've seen as far as Sam Bradford. Some of the things that he can do really well, I think he does a little bit better than Tyrod. I think where the issue comes is when you look at the certain efficiency stats, how well Tyrod actually does on third and fourth down compared to Sam Bradford. I'm just a little bit hesitant to pull the trigger, so I'm probably going to go in the no category, although I still do like Tyrod, a.k.a. Ty God.
All right, JR, QB1, what are your thoughts? Tyrod, Sam, that trade gets put out there. What are you doing if you're experiment?
I would. I would make the trade. I don't know if I would do it straight up, but, you know, Tyrod is the type of quarterback that you kind of need behind this offensive line, considering that it is a below average group right now. They just don't have a lot of chemistry and continuity. And we saw how they struggled last year. And you have to have a guy that's able to move, especially within the pocket, and be able to create plays when he's moved off his spot within the pocket as well. So they need a guy that can move around a little bit, not a guy that's more of a statue like Bradford is. And, you know, I think Tyrod was a little bit more efficient than Sam Bradford. Not as accurate, but as far as, you know, going down the field, he was a little bit more efficient. And in certain areas, he was a little bit more efficient as well. So I would make the trade.
Miles, where you at with it?
Yeah, I'm kind of on that same page too. I probably would, just for a few reasons. He's almost 2 years younger than Bradford. He's more mobile. The ability, I think he's, I think he has a little bit better of a, he throws the ball downfield a little more often. And he comes cheaper than a guy like Sam Bradford. He doesn't have the, you know, that first overall pick clout still kind of hanging. And he's not the big strapping, you know, quarterback that looks great throwing the ball. Not that he doesn't look good throwing the ball or anything like that, but he doesn't have that, you know, that de facto prototypical QB look, you know, in terms of size and throwing ability like that. So I think it kind of brings his value down, which is unfortunate because he's, you know, since he's been in Buffalo, he's, you know, really shown his worth. And I know I'd probably pull the trigger mainly based off of age and price tag especially.
And you kind of, you know, offline, you kind of had a theory, or we're kind of talking about, you know, if you were to pull the trigger on that trade, kind of how you would play things out going forward. I guess, could you share that with the listeners in terms of Tyrod's on the Vikings, and let us know kind of how you would move that forward and make it work?
Yeah. I mean, if Tyrod's on the Vikings, I'm kind of treating it in a similar fashion as like a Sam Bradford, in the fact that, you know, if I'm keeping him for next season, Tyrod Taylor for 2018, and, you know, well, I know the whole Teddy situation with the tolling contract might be a bigger hole than we kind of expected it to be for a while there. But, you know, if both of those guys are on the roster, I'm still in the fact of drafting a quarterback fairly high. I've said, I think we should draft a quarterback, you know, sometime at day two, like a day two pick, whether it's the second or third round. I just think we need to get that, you know, young developmental QB into camp, and, you know, let Teddy and Tyrod kind of do their thing, compete. And if one of those guys, you know, whoever wins the job, you kind of let the potentially try to trade the other guy and let that rookie quarterback kind of be the backup and, you know, hopefully the long-term future. And if for some reason, you know, you have, you know, Teddy comes back or Tyrod, you know, whichever of those two guys becomes kind of that franchise quarterback that you're looking for, then you just have a really good backup quarterback on your roster in that draft pick. And investing on a, you know, a second or third round pick isn't the end of the world to be your backup quarterback, in my opinion, just because you don't have to pay him a whole bunch. You don't have to pay him a whole bunch of money for four years. And, you know, you kind of know what you have with them, and you can kind of develop them slowly. So that's just kind of how I'm feeling with that situation. I think, you know, go get somebody, bring somebody in, bring somebody young, new in, and kind of develop them from there.
And Yinka, you kind of had some different thoughts on how that all should shake out, or how we should handle the quarterback situation, be it Tyrod or Sam, kind of with that, you know, the camp battle, Teddy and all that. I guess, could you share kind of your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, I mean, I've been a proponent of, you know, obviously drafting the quarterback high. I've said that for a while now, but I'm not in the same camp that I think a lot of people are in. They're like, oh yeah, just let Teddy and Sam Bradford battle it out. I want no sort of QB battle between those two. I think to date right now, statistically, they are average quarterbacks. And, you know, in my opinion, Teddy has a little bit more, not even a little bit, a lot more upside.
But when you want, however, if they're both average quarterbacks, wouldn't you want that competition to kind of weed out who's the better of the two then?
No, because I don't want two average guys just proving who's a little bit better than average. I would much rather – that's why I'm putting more stock into this draft guy, because I would want to see if this rookie who might potentially have a little bit more upside than these two, actually battling one of them to see. Because in my opinion, I think the effect cost that you would see between the two, between Teddy and Sam – you know, is minimal. Okay, you know, Sam is just slightly better than Teddy. Teddy's slightly better than Sam. I think that's what you would get. Whereas if you bring in a rookie, in my opinion, if the rookie ends up beating them or even gets close, I think you might have something with that rookie where his upside would be a little bit higher than a Sam and Teddy battle. Sam's pretty much at his ceiling. Teddy could be in a few years at his ceiling. We don't know what that's going to be at. And if that's still minimal compared to maybe what a rookie could bring you, I'd much rather roll the dice with a rookie. I mean, you've seen other teams do it. So I just don't want – I know it may not be a popular take, but I don't want to see any kind of QB battle between Sam and Teddy. I want it to be Sam and rookie or Teddy and rookie or maybe even Tyrod and rookie, but not Sam versus Teddy.
Okay, and JR, what are your thoughts on kind of everything that that Miles and Yinka just said? I guess, you know, how would you want that to play out if we did trade for Tyrod, or if we didn't trade for Tyrod, how do you want the Vikings to play things with Sam, Teddy, and the draft going into 2018?
I mean, I think they're doing it right. They're slow playing it right now and just letting the situation, you know, play itself out. And that's how you have to do the situation. They didn't imagine Teddy progressing this fast or, you know, healing this fast because they declined his fifth year option. And, you know, you don't want to get in a situation where it's a situation similar to what Sharif Floyd is going through right now. So they made the right decision, declining his option. But just on the subject of 2018 quarterbacks and what can possibly happen, if they draft a quarterback, whether it's high or a mid-round guy, and they lose the competition, I don't think they're just going to up and trade that guy just because you spent draft capital on that guy. And whenever teams spend draft capital on a quarterback, they're really hesitant to let him go because they don't want to develop this guy or spend draft capital on a guy and, you know, somebody else pays the dividends or reaps the benefits from it. So I really don't see them, you know, using a high pick on a quarterback if Sam and Teddy are here or if just one of them are here. Just because I don't think they would take a guy higher in the mid rounds just to get rid of him. But I honestly would love a quarterback competition next year just because one of them's going to bring back assets in return. Even if we don't see Teddy play this year, I still think that someone would take a chance on him just because of what he showed pre-injury. And, you know, it's just a risk that you have to take as a franchise. And it just comes down to exactly what you want to do. Just speaking on other teams, if they want to trade for one of them, Bradford obviously has value. He's always going to have value no matter how good or how bad he plays this year just because of his reputation around the league and what teams have got for him in the past. So as long as he stays healthy, he'll have value, and I think Teddy will have value. It'll be minimal, but, I mean, it only takes one team to pull the trigger on him and believe in him. So
Jacksonville's probably on the phone with Rick right now.
Well, but the Vikings would have to sign Teddy to a contract depending on, you know, how this season's plays out because he's a free agent after this year, unless, you know, his contract tolls, which we'll touch base on in, you know, later in the show, but.
Or right now. Let's just talk about it right now. You know, Miles, we had JR and Yinka out here, you know, giving Vikings Twitter anxiety, posting all kinds of clips from
pro football talk.
And, you know, I was posting clips of the actual CBA. JR's out here hollering at agents to try to get them to explain, you know, contract situation. And then probably the most important piece of information that we got in this whole thing is when JR's new best friend, Teddy Bridgewater, responded to one of his tweets with a laugh out loud when JR was talking about tolling Teddy's contract, bringing in a rookie, and Teddy just laughed and kept it moving. So, you know, with that, JR, we are talking about your new best friend. So we'll let you go first. What are your thoughts on this whole contract situation? Based on, you know, the little bit of detective work you've done on the Twitter.com, how are you expecting this whole thing to play out?
So just backing up to the tweet, I was asleep when he responded to it. So I wake up the next morning, and I'm just like, whoa, what happened? Because I had like 60 notifications, and I'm just like, what's going on? And I see that Teddy responded to the message or to the tweet. And I was like, oh, man, that's pretty funny. But I'm kind of glad he did it because in my mind, that tells you how he feels about the whole contract tolling situation. And, I mean, it doesn't give us a clear, defined answer as to what it will take to toll his contract. But in his mind, he wants to play this season. And, you know, from his standpoint, I'm completely behind him. And I would be the same exact way. There's no way I would want to sit out 2 years of football and expect somebody to take a chance on me or believe in me. So And, you know, he's taking those steps, those proper steps and rehab steps to be able to play this year. We still don't know when it'll be or who it'll be for. You know, it's a mystery at this point. But, you know, I tweeted out an article from Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk, and Joel Corey, who was a former sports agent or NFL agent. And they basically were kind of saying the same thing, and that is he has to be on the PUP list the entire year in order for his contract to toll. We still haven't gotten a clear, defined answer about that, but it seems as if the quotes that Rick Spielman has said, that he has a defined answer from the NFL, but every time somebody asks him or the NFL about the situation, they go quiet. So it seems like those are the only two parties that really know the real answer to it. But like I said earlier, they're playing it out the right way and just let it play out to see how it happens.
So, Miles, first question, how jealous are you that Teddy Bridgewater follows JR? Next question, Teddy contract situation, what are your thoughts?
First off, I'm extremely jealous just because, you know, we have a puppy that named Teddy, you know, so at least show the love there. With the whole contract thing, I mean, it's just, I think, obviously, we know the Vikings know exactly what the situation's about. They know, you know, what they have to do to get Teddy's contract told, whether, you know, if it's the six games or the full season. So they know. I think they're just still trying to figure out what they need to do. And I still think, you know, as great as Teddy's looked in his rehab, you know, videos and such, they're still probably like, you know, we're still expecting him to be a little ways off. So they're still, like JR said, I think they're just slow playing. And I think that's the smart thing for them to do. Don't make any rush decisions. You know, just play by ear. Just continue to get him doing rehab. And once he's cleared, that's a whole nother story of how they play that out. It's all about how Sam's playing at that point or how the team potentially is playing at that point. You know, whether you want to try something new or not. I personally don't think Teddy should play at all this season unless, you know, just for his long-term sake, but that's neither here nor there right now because we don't even know what that situation is. But for the contract, I think it just puts the Vikings in a tougher hole if it's the full season having to toll his contract, because at that point you end this season without a starting quarterback heading into the offseason, and you have to throw money at somebody. I personally would go after I'd go after Teddy. I think you'd get Teddy a lot cheaper. Give him a 1-year, you know, incentivated contract just to kind of see how he plays out. And then, you know, kind of what we were talking about earlier, go with the high to mid round draft pick at quarterback and kind of let that play out and see who wins.
So Yinka, you've done quite enough damage, I think, today, posting your cryptic stuff on the twitter.com, but you know, you wrote an article where you kind of got into this a little bit. You psychoanalyze Teddy's responses to things that people were putting out there on Twitter. And what we discovered was that Teddy Bridgewater has caused a locker room rift. The first response to your tweet promoting your article gave us some very in-depth psychoanalysis about the locker room rift apparently that has been caused by one Teddy Bridgewater and his cryptic tweets, etc. So could you give us, I mean, you were just there, you were at training camp, you talked to players. Help us understand, how are the Vikings still able to function with all of the tension that has obviously been caused by Twitter and Teddy liking or saying laugh out loud to JR's tweet? And what are your thoughts about how the Vikings are going to move forward dealing with all of this drama that has been caused by Teddy Bridgewater?
I think you hit the nail on the head. You kept emphasizing psychoanalysis. You said a few times psychoanalysis, because I think some of the analysis out there is quite psycho. I think the biggest rift that we can get, I mean, I interviewed Teddy, and I think the biggest rift that we could probably get out of it is Teddy's not he doesn't watch Game of Thrones. That's probably where the rift is coming. You know, you have half the locker room who is, you know, Stark supporters, other half is Lannister supporters, and Teddy don't even watch it. So that's probably where the rift is coming. Smart but that man. Being said, I think That being said, I think part of it is just people trying to find excuses for why they really just don't like Teddy as either a person or quarterback. You know, I mean, to date, he is a relatively average quarterback. But again, the guy who started last season to date is also an average quarterback. So, you know, trying to read the tea leaves and look at ways in which that players are, you know, reacting towards Teddy and whatnot. But I think it's really clear that, I mean, you hear time and time again, players love Teddy, coaches love Teddy, a good majority of the fan base loves Teddy. And I think that says something as far as, like, he hasn't really played at a very, very high level, you know. And I know he took a team to a playoff game, but, you know, statistically speaking, he has plenty of room for improvement. But I think that speaks more to who he is as a person, that's he's been able to get the love and trust and support of fans, coaches, and players, that I don't think that he's necessarily a locker room cancer. One thing that I did see at training camp is when everyone was coming out as far as, you know, the night practice and stuff, Teddy didn't come out until he tried to sneak in, essentially. And then even after he snuck in, he snuck out again. And I think that kind of speaks to he does not want to be a distraction. He doesn't want the attention on to him. But that being said, he does very much want to let everyone know, like, I'm still a competitor. I want to play. I think that's what he was trying to get at with the laugh out loud that he sent off to JR's tweet. Like, he wants to play, and understandably, to respond to something that some people have said, they're just like, well, you know, I think Teddy should just be okay with, you know, getting 1 year prove it deal and stuff. And, like, you know, that's great in hindsight, but at the same time, I mean, you have to ask yourself, if your boss came to you and they're just like, well, we're not going to give you very much money because we want you to prove your worth to us. You know, not everybody would have the same reaction. Like, yeah, absolutely, I'll rise up to the challenge. And that's not to say that he won't rise up to the challenge, but again, I think Teddy does, even for a short years in the league, I think he does start to understand what his worth is. The demand for quarterbacks is high, which makes more teams act foolish as far as what they should do.
Oh, no.
Their team.
Okay. Because I feel a quarterback rant coming up here. So I got to jump in. No. I got to jump in because we're on short time.
It was just what the,
okay.
That was,
okay.
That's all I had to say. It's okay. Teddy knows his worth. So, yeah.
Because, you know, we lose you sometimes when you start talking quarterbacks. We lose you every now and again. So, you know, I just wanted to jump in before we completely lost you. But yeah, before Yinka, you know, woke up in a cold sweat in his bed, just mumbling Blake Bortles or something. So, JR, you had a pretty long conversation. I guess we'll call it a conversation, some tweets maybe, with someone who was very upset with Teddy Bridgewater for causing this locker room rift. And I just want to ask you this one very important question: why did Cordero Patterson stop talking when Teddy walked by that one time?
I have no idea what he was talking about in that whole message, but I just felt like that was the perfect opportunity to use the Winnie the Pooh pictures. That was the perfect moment for that, and I thought I executed it pretty well.
Yeah, that was well done. That was well done. So enough of all that nonsense. The next thing that's going to come up late, or the next thing that people have kind of been talking about, is, you know, Seattle. Our offensive line is missing some pretty important pieces going into this game. And so now the conversation is who should play and who shouldn't. So, JR, I'll start with you. What are your thoughts? Should the starting O play versus Seattle?
Yes. Put every single one of them out there. They need to be out there. You know, they need to develop some type of chemistry. I know Alex Boone will most likely be out. Riley Reiff is out, of course. And all we can practice, they've been going with the interior of Easton at left guard, Elfline at center, and Berger at right guard. So that seems to be the interior that they're going to throw out there for the first set or the first team. I'm interested to see how that looks. And who knows, maybe it's a good combination. I mean, we know Alex Boone is going to be the starting left guard, but Easton might prove to be that swing guard guy that they can use down the road, and maybe he can replace Berger if he does lose out, you know, on the center battle to Elfline, which we probably do expect here in the near future. But Who knows, it might be a blessing in disguise, but I just want to see them move the ball down the field and get some type of points. I expect them probably to play the first quarter. And that's usually what the starters usually play in the second preseason game. But I just want to see them grow from the first game. That's the biggest thing I want to see.
Awesome. Miles, how about you, man? What are you thinking? Should they play him, or should they, you know, should Sam have a tired arm or something and need to rest when we go play Seattle this week?
No, I'd say the only person I probably wouldn't consider playing is Diggs. He'd be the only guy I'd consider saying maybe no, but the rest, let him go. They need to build that chemistry. They need to make some plays. They need to, because this is the time where they start developing the more the plays that they want to start running, you know, during the regular season. You know, I know it's still that time where you're testing out new plays and testing out new formations and all that stuff, but it's also an important time for all the guys to kind of mesh and kind of learn it together and develop together. So I think I'd like to see them go. If it's supposed to be a full quarter of this game, then let's see him do it. Let's just hope they get out of it healthy. I mean, it's a football game, so you don't want to not play too many guys, because you need to see what they can do as a whole unit.
All right, and rounding us out here, Saxy Prince, what are your thoughts? How should they go about dealing with things when we get to Seattle?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a proponent of having the starters start. Biggest thing that I want to see is as march down the field, score a touchdown. I do want to see how the kicking and returning game is. That is going to be quite an important battle. I think it's kind of slept on how, you know, we've lost a kick returner, and Cordero was a good one. Punting duties to see who can actually, you know, can someone unseat Marcus Sherrills? Doubt it, but I think the kicking game is something I'm going to be paying attention to, because I want to see someone kind of start to run away with the job.
Cool, cool, cool. And that's a perfect segue for us here. I know, JR, you teased it on Twitter that you have an upcoming article, kind of things you'll be watching in this game. So I guess, could you give us a little bit more? I guess, what are you going to be watching? What are the most important things from your perspective as we go into this game?
Yeah, so just I'm going to release the article tomorrow morning. Just five things that I'm going to be looking at. And I'll just go ahead and preview two of them. Which guys will continue to emerge from the 2017 draft class? We talked about in the pod last week about.
Hold on. But today I was informed that none of the Vikings 2017 draft picks would be playing at all in the 2017 season. So I'm confused by
what you're saying. I thought you said starting, not playing.
Okay, well, they won't be starting. which seems odd given how things went in the anyway. Go ahead, because Benoit seems to be his points seem to be in direct opposition to what you're telling us,
yeah. Yeah. Now remember, Willie Beavers is the X factor. Remember he said. but anyway, that's beyond the point. Yeah, I'm going to be releasing an article tomorrow morning, just some five things that I'll be looking at. I'll just go ahead and release two of them, like I said before. Which rookies are going to continue to emerge? We talked about Stacy Coley, who had a really good game against Buffalo. The two offensive linemen, and Isidore and Elfline, had good games, and Dalvin Cook, of course. And the undrafted guys, Tayshaun Bauer and Eric Wilson, will they continue to progress and build off their strong rookie debuts or NFL debuts? Another one is Laquan Treadwell. You know, is he going to play? We don't know. We still haven't got official word, but this will be his first debut off his impressive training camp prior to the hamstring injury, and we're looking forward to seeing him play, and I hope he does play.
Well, you talk Laquan Treadwell, so obviously we have to go to Miles Gorham next. Miles, other than Laquan Treadwell potentially making his debut, what else will you be looking for in the Seattle game?
I'm excited to see the way the defense can handle the run. I know. It sounds like Thomas Rawls might be out for Seattle, but seeing them go against a usual foe that they're used to and a guy of Eddie Lacy and kind of going to that thumper and seeing how the run defense goes, because I think Tom Johnson's an important key there, because he's that guy who's starting at the three tech right now, and I think he's the one of the X factors, because the talent around him is phenomenal. So if he can kind of elevate his game even a little bit more, especially against the run, That'll go a long way. Another one, I think everybody wants Andrew Sandejo to not be the starting safety, which I just don't understand, just because I don't think Curse is ready yet. But if for some reason Curse, if Sendejo is going to stay hurt and be hurt through the rest of the preseason or however long it's going to be, I want to see how Curse kind of handles that. And I know Antoine Exum's been another guy who's gotten some run with the ones, whether it's at safety or corner. So I kind of want to continue to see how that battle pans out too.
Awesome. And Saxy Prince, how about yourself? What are you going to be looking for in this game?
I think I already mentioned as far as like the kickers, I want to see if, you know, Taylor's going to run with it. Maybe Kane. Who else was really any of the four guys that are kind of doing kicking duties for, you know, punts, field goals, all that stuff. Also the linebacker position, I'm going to be paying attention to them. You know, I know Ben Gideon has been getting a little bit more snaps in base. So I want to see what he has to contribute there, as well as Anthony Barr, you know, kind of piling on to what he did last game and see if he can continue to play at a very high level, because that's what we really do need, Anthony Barr to play at a high level. So linebackers and kickers are what I'm going to be paying attention to.
Yep, those are some good points that you all raised. And I think you pretty much touched on all the things that I'm interested in seeing. I just want to see the offense open things up just a little bit more. I know people are saying it's the preseason. They're obviously going to keep it vanilla, and fine. You don't need to show your whole playbook, but this isn't an offense that can just kind of rest on its laurels and flip a switch come week one. I mean, they weren't good last year. They need to start working on the things that they weren't good at last year, and we need to see them do it at some point. Preseason is the perfect opportunity to at least try some things, try some deep shots, try to be a little bit more aggressive on, you know, some third downs to get some conversions. So that's ultimately what I'm looking to see is if the first team offense does get out there, I want to see Sam and maybe not just Sam, Sam and Shermer take some risks just to see, to test things a little bit, because after, I mean, it's preseason, so it doesn't really matter all that much. Is anything else you guys wanted to say on Seattle before we transition things into this interview with Mr. Fitzgerald?
Blair Walsh.
Oh.
Eyes on Blair Walsh. That'll be fun.
He's in Seattle. It doesn't even matter.
Yeah, 60-yard field goal to knock us out of the playoffs is what's incoming for Blair Walsh.
They're in Seattle, so it won't be as bad. Like, if we were in Minnesota, then he'd definitely hear the Boo Birds.
Oh, that'd be bad.
That's crazy, y'all. Like, that was my 25th birthday, too. Like, I was at the game, freezing my toes off. I damn near lost both my feet. And he's going to miss 27. Let me not even get there.
Oh, man, you were at the game?
I was at the game, y'all.
Boy.
Outside.
Ooh, bless your
heart. On my 25th birthday.
That is
serious. Bless your heart.
At halftime, I had to, like, go upstairs and, like, take off all my shoes and socks and just rub my feet. I'm not even kidding you.
Wow.
Yeah, that couldn't be me. But, you know, good for you, Yinka.
Good no, for you. Not good for me, man.
I said,
we lost that game. I
said, no way to go in that game.
I decided last minute because, you know, it was my birthday. I'm like, all right, what else am I going to do on my birthday? What did you say?
You can get like tickets for like $20 for that game, right?
Yeah, but I think we ended up dropping like $200 on that game. So
balling,
and then walked home.
Walked home. I barely could walk home. I nearly walked home on my hands. My feet were like they were swollen for like 2 weeks. I kid you not.
All right, y'all, we're going to go ahead and slide this thing on over to our interview with Jason Fitzgerald from overthecap.com. So, yeah, hang on. Give it a listen. You'll probably learn a little something. All right, well, welcome back to a special edition of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. And today, we have a special guest for you. We have Jason from overthecap.com, our go-to destination whenever we have salary cap contract-type questions. So because some things have popped up and Jason has actually written about the Vikings recently, we figured we'd have him on to talk about that article, talk about himself, and then a couple other questions. So, Jason, thanks for coming on.
No, not a problem. Glad to be on with you guys.
And we'll start off with an easy question for you here. I guess tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became kind of the go-to salary cap expert on the online space or in the online space.
You know, for the most part, it was just a topic that I was kind of interested in, just kind of bored one day and decided I think I need to learn a little about this side of football. As a Jets fan, that was a big thing that was going on at the time, was issues with their salary cap. So I kind of taught myself the various rules and everything else, decided to start a little website called NY Jets Cap. And it kind of took off from there. And after a little bit of time, I decided I wanted to take it to a much bigger level and try and do the entire league. And, you know, we're pretty popular when it comes to the stuff. I wrote a book this past year called Crunching Numbers with my friend Vijay, where we really break down the CBA. There's a lot of teams that are using it, agents. It's a pretty unique book, and it's kind of a unique website as well. Obviously, most people go there to get contract numbers that we're able to track down one way or another. But I think people sometimes like some of the articles that we do and some of the other things where, you know, we really get into the nuts and the bolts of, you know, the how and the why of some of these contracts and why some deals are really just so terrible. So that's a little bit about Over the Cap and, you know, my background. I'm a Jets fan. I think most people that follow me know that. That's a sad thing most of the time, but it's good sometimes for some of the salary cap stuff.
That's awesome. And that's a perfect segue, actually, because you mentioned, you know, the articles that you guys write, and you do go very in-depth and give a different perspective on contracts than you typically would get on some of your big media sites. And you wrote about the Vikings' recent spending spree, and you had some complimentary things to say about the way the team was structuring these deals. So I was wondering if you'd be able to give us a little bit of insight on your thoughts on you know, what the Vikings have done with locking up the key pieces of their defense.
Well, the big thing that the Vikings did in this case that I think was kind of unique, it was something that we don't see a lot that other teams are doing. And what they're doing is they're signing some of their veteran players who have 2 years left on their contract. In this case, it was Joseph and Griffin. And what they did was they basically gave them these big extensions. They have big money numbers in there. Everyone's happy about it. You know, the big reporters of the world, they're going to go crazy, you know, tweeting these numbers out about how this is the, you know, the biggest contract or the biggest guarantee in the history of something or other. This guy now ranks third in an annual value, whatever the numbers are. But the reality is, all they basically did was guarantee them this year's salary and next year's salary, which by and large, they were going to earn anyway. You knew they weren't getting cut this year. Odds are they weren't getting cut next year. So all they did was really guarantee it and give him a small, small raise to basically have him potentially under contract for the 3 or 4 years after that. And it's just a great way to maintain flexibility, do a really good job with your salary cap management. And sometimes more importantly than that, keep your locker room happy, because these players, under the impression that they got terrific contracts, and they're not bad deals by any stretch of the imagination, but they're definitely much more team friendly than if guys played out the year and kind of try to force the issue next year by holding out, or waited to become free agents. And, you know, as players age, you know, they don't usually do as well. And when you get to that kind of contract level, that Griffin would have been at, or Joseph would have been at, they're still probably going to be young and productive enough to where you have a really tough decision on your hands when they're 30 years old. You know, do we extend them, guarantee 2 more years? Do we let them walk? By doing it right now, they've pretty much solved any kind of problems that they could have in the future if their play did tail off. So, yeah, I really liked what they did there. I thought it was and it's something more and more teams really should focus on doing.
And you mentioned there that, you know, approaching the salaries and approaching the contracts in this way is something that it also can keep the locker room happy. I guess the next question is something that, you know, just based on reports that are coming out now, is something that potentially could go the other way. And so we were hoping to get your thoughts on kind of contract tolling and what that really means and how that relates to the, you know, I guess, potential Teddy Bridgewater situation that we have kind of looming on the horizon.
All right. There's certain rules that are in the collective bargaining agreement that basically state that if a player is unable to perform in the last year of his contract, not because of a football injury sustained in this year. So Bridgewater's football injury came the year before. So he goes on a certain list called physically unable to perform. If he remains on that list for the entire season, his contract will toll to the next year. So what that means is, he's not going to get to be a free agent. He would be under contract to the Vikings at the same price he's at now. I don't have that number in front of me, but it should be a pretty low number, you know, 1.8 million, 2 million, something along those lines. So that's what will happen if he's unable to pass a physical at any point this year and rejoin the team. It's something that happens pretty rarely. I'm going to say maybe two or three players last year had this happen. And I'm not sure if any of those players actually remained with their teams, because most of them, like Sebastian Vollmer in New England, they were ready to move on because I think they looked at him as a chronic injury problem, and they had other players in place. The Vikings could end up doing that, but given the price at the quarterback position, I would imagine they would hold on to Bridgewater, you know, if he's unable to play this year, and they would have him at worst as a backup for pretty low cost next season.
Yeah, that leads to the kind of the next question we wanted to ask is, what are your thoughts on where the quarterback market seems to be heading? Because every year these numbers seem to be getting bigger and bigger. And from the outside looking in, it looks like it's going to hit a point where, you know, maybe there's a bubble in the market or something like that. Is that really what's happening? Are quarterback salaries really taking up like a larger percentage of the cap? Or is it just that the cap's going up and quarterback salaries are kind of moving with the rest of the cap?
I think they're kind of moving with the cap. I thought the quarterback salaries were going to hit a bubble probably about 3 years ago. Aaron Rodgers signed a contract for about $22 million a year, which was the high water mark. And I really did not expect so many players to get close to him. You know, Cam Newton ended up right around 21. Matt Ryan is around 21. Ryan Tannehill got 19. Colin Kaepernick was around 18 or 19. And I thought the disparity between Aaron Rodgers and these other guys is really so big that they were way overcompensated. But that pretty much just keeps going. And what you see right now is anybody that can play quarterback is basically going to get paid $20, $21, $22 million a year. Making an astronomical jump, Andrew Luck could have. I don't know exactly what happened there. Yeah, it jumped to 25, but that wasn't that kind of a jump. Stafford is really the next guy. Maybe Stafford can get it to $30 million. Right now I project him to be probably around $28 million. I think the league needs that. They need a couple quarterbacks that are paid really high to kind of make things a little more normalized, because if you're the Miami Dolphins and Ryan Tannehill is your quarterback, and I know he's hurt right now, but there's almost no salary disparity between him and a true Pro Bowl player, you're not going to have the money to make up, you know, you're not going to have the money to acquire talent at these other positions to be able to compete with the teams that truly have a great quarterback. And I can't really figure out why teams aren't seeing that whatsoever.
Jason, real quick, I have a question along the lines of the Sam Bradford, Teddy Bridgewater. I had a take a while ago that, you know, after looking at the Vikings really retooling, re-signing guys like Everson Griffin, Linval Joseph, locking down some of the other guys, not really leaving them with a lot of money to spend on the quarterback position. So I kind of had the take on, you know, maybe letting Sam Bradford walk and then you know, maybe going with Teddy Bridgewater and then drafting a rookie. What do you feel is the Vikings' best, you know, best decision moving forward for next year?
You know, you're going to have to wait to see how the season plays out to see how Bradford does. I don't believe Sam Bradford is worth $20 million a year. I don't think Sam Bradford is worth whatever he was paid by the Eagles on this last contract, you know, 17, 17.5. I don't see that as really realistic. I would much rather have Bridgewater at a lower price. And I think rookies are really a way to go. If you can get a first round draft pick, or you know, you're seeing more and more talent later in the draft playing well, if you can get those guys for cheap, I mean, you can sink money into so many other positions. Again, maybe he'll have such a great season that there's no way that you can say, well, we're not going to keep him on a franchise tag or something like that. Possible decision to make, but if the team finishes 500 again, 9-7, something like that, I think you have to make that decision to move on. You don't want to turn yourself into a team like the Kansas City Chiefs with an Alex Smith type in there, where you're pretty much just stuck in that, you know, that little wild card level. You're not going to get beyond that. And you saw it this year where most people, I think, were surprised that they moved up to draft a quarterback. But I think that's because they saw the reality of the situation and realized, you know what, we're really not going to go anywhere with Alex Smith. He's getting late in the contract now. We're at a point where we can move on. So you end up going in the draft and getting somebody. And I would rather just not even waste the money on someone like Bradford. I can get somebody better, or in this case, have somebody just as good, I think, if he's healthy.
That's awesome. I mean, those really were the we had five questions that we wanted to get in with you. You pretty much knocked them out of the park for us. They're really the last bonus question we had, and you pretty much touched on that one already when you were speaking earlier, is we wanted you to tell us a little bit about the your book, Crunching Numbers, which you did, but then also let our listeners know where they can find the book if they would like to buy it and really dig into some of that the salary cap and salary cap and CBA information.
Okay, well, the book Crunching Numbers, really what we did with the book was we decided that there are really no ways to learn about the CBA and NFL contracts. It's the question that I get the most since I started OTC, or even before that when I would do the Jet site, is how did you learn to do this? Like, how does this work? How does that work? So finally, one day we just kind of said, you know, maybe we really do need to put a book out on this. And so we covered as many topics as possible, you know, piece by piece, using examples that anyone should be able to find. You know, we've cited every example in there from ESPN reports, Pro Football Talk reports, Yahoo Sports, all kinds of beat reporters in there, just to show you information I was able to use to learn this. It's a lot easier now than when I first did it. And the book will really walk you through the ways to value a contract and everything else. It's, if you want to work as a sports agent, if you want to work as someone on the team side negotiating contracts, if you're a scout that has aspirations of being a general manager and want to learn more about this, because there's nowhere to learn it and the teams really aren't going to teach you either if they don't think you're on a track to negotiate contracts, it's a great book to pick up. You can pick it up on Amazon. We do have a website as well, crunchingnumbersbook.com. But Amazon, you know, everybody has Amazon accounts. That's the easiest place to get it from. And you can just go there, do a search for Crunching Numbers, or go to overthecap.com and click on the book there. And that'll take you to it, and you can purchase the book.
Well, that is awesome. That's all I have, I guess. J.R. Yanka, did you have any final questions for Jason before we let him get out of here?
Nah, he answered everything. Thanks for coming on again, Jason.
Not a problem.
Yeah, thank you, Jason.
Yep. Thanks again for coming on, man. You have a great night.
You guys do the same.
All right. And that was our five questions and a bonus question with Jason Fitzgerald from overthecap.com. Go ahead and wrap this thing on up. Anything new since the last time we talked? Anything that anyone's going to be working on? Miles, you figure out what that next article is going to look like?
JR, what?
Prince. I mean, Prince, I feel like you owe us some stuff. You know, in the comments, yeah. People were talking about, you know, I can't wait to read that Teddy article.
No, I think I actually will have time this weekend since it's my weekend off. So
the Teddy article is gone.
I actually started working on it a little bit today. Like I said, I'm gonna kind of build it more narrative like. So yeah,
I'll be writing a recap of the game.
Okay. Okay.
I'll be doing my fantasy football draft this weekend, so this is a big one for me. This is a good one. This is my fun league.
All right. Well, we expect a full breakdown of how that went and what picks you made there.
Yeah, yeah. It's an auction league too, so 16 team auction league.
Oh boy, that's the big one.
Yeah.
I like auction leagues. Those are fun.
Yeah.
Well, all right then. We'll go ahead and wrap this thing up. I did want to make one comment. I mean, the listeners aren't gonna be able to really pick this one up here. But Yanka, JR, did y'all notice how Miles positioned the light today? It's like he was trying to get on Team Darkskin today. You know, he got the light right behind him, got the shadow. Miles was trying to be on the team this week.
Yeah, he was.
I'm trying to get that JR on.
I'm just going bald.
I just got a cut today.
Oh.
We lost both. We didn't lose just Prince.
Man. Yeah, we started talking about JR's hair, and he was like, I am done with y'all. He bounced.
His hairline cut the cord.
JR, are you back? Wrong, man.
Yeah, I'm just going bald up there. That's all it is.
Okay. We thought, you know, Miles just offended you so much. You were just like, I'm done with this. And just hung up.
Nah, man.
I mean, we expected Yankees to drop you. That wasn't something we were expecting.
I'm on my phone, so.
Okay. Well, all y'all, thank you very much for listening to another episode of the Climb in the Pocket podcast. Good to have the whole gang back together. And, you know, slide on over to climbingthepocket.com. We should have some good stuff coming for you from JR before and after the game. And our man Flip will have something coming out over the weekend. And stay tuned. We might have a new podcast added to the family coming for you guys next week. Have a good night, y'all.